Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks, and I'm joined by the Chris Wilder now to my Chris Wilder 5 years ago. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
Oh, Justin, welcome along to the number one championship podcast, the Second Tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. We've got a juicy, juicy show lined up for you, ladies and gentlemen, based off the midweek action, which we've had plenty of twists and turns for us to get our teeth into very shortly. But before we get underway, it's of course, Justin, time to reveal our first winner of our competition to win a copy of Football Manager 2024. We're giving away three copies of the game, one today, one in tomorrow's episode, and the final one in Sunday's episode. So you've still got time to enter if you haven't already. And the first winner, I'm delighted to say, is Mac Latham. Well done, Mac. Say well done, Justin.
Well done, Mac.
Good. We'll be in contact with you, Mac. And if you want to be like Mac, all you have to do is leave the show a 5-star review on whichever podcast platform you are listening to us on, particularly Apple Podcasts, if that's your preferred choice. 5-star review it, screenshot it, and then email secondtierpod@gmail.com with the subject line Football Manager 2024 competition. There's still two copies of the game left. If you've already entered, you don't need to enter again. You'll still be in the draw for the game. But stay tuned to the next two episodes to see if you've won. So as I say, a jam-packed show ahead, ladies and gentlemen. All the midweek games which we have got for you right here, including a crazy game at Loftus Road, which we'll be getting onto very shortly, but we've also got a crazy game at Portman Road, which we'll be looking forward to very shortly as well. And we'll also talk about the title race as a whole, and also the relegation battle, which has got incredibly tight, hasn't it? I mean, even tighter than it was, Justin. 2 points separating 16th and 23rd. Madness. So we'll get onto that very shortly. But as I say, let's begin with a mental game at Loftus Road between QPR and West Brom. 2-2 it finished, and this game had everything, didn't it? A worldie, a missed penalty, a ball cleared off the line with a hand, two wonderfully scrappy goals, and perhaps best of all, a Steve Cook overhead kick. Just wonderful entertainment for a Wednesday night, Justin.
It was ridiculous. And again, the magnitude of the game at both ends of the pitch as well was ridiculous, because obviously you've got QPR fighting relegation and West Brom trying to stay within the playoffs. It was absolutely bonkers. And for both sides, who have been quite, they're quite conservative teams in their own way. They don't like to keep games open. They like some control. But this was as open as you get in terms of a game. It was incredible. And then there's all the controversies, which I was just shouting and shout. I love this game so much. Again, this, if you want an advert for the championship, this is the type of game you want to see, because you know each team goes away happy. They got a draw, they got a point each, and there's been a lot of controversy, a lot of end-to-end stuff, and a lot to unpick. It was fantastic.
Yeah, considering the only alternative really on Wednesday night was the Champions League action, and one was just Man City spanking FC Copenhagen, then you know this is a great alternative really, isn't it? Because if you tuned in to watch this, you certainly were rewarded for it with an incredible game. I mean, Steve Cook's overhead kick was sensational. God. The limbs, if that went in, would have been incredible.
I had to double check who it was who pulled that off, because it's not always clear when it's on the pitch. And I know we talked about Steve Cook's overhead kick, but Darnell Ferdinand's goal line clearance was fantastic, because that was unreal. Alex Palmer was beaten in the West Brom goal, and Darnell Ferdinand heads it over while under the bar. That is unreal. I don't know, athleticism to be able to do that. The skill to do that is fantastic. But yeah, no, it's not taking anything away from Steve Cook. That was extraordinary. Not a prolific goal scorer as well for a defender. whatever that means.
I think you're giving Darnell Furlong a lot of credit, which actually I'm quite angry with him because I really wanted that to go in just to see the limbs.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, we had a brilliant moment in the championship season brutally taken away from us.
What would Steve Cook do if he pulled off an overhead kick?
Exactly. But I don't know how he would have celebrated, but I think it would just been just stunned silence around Loftus Road. I mean, the big moment from the game came early in the second half when QPR had a shot, which Cedric Kipre cleared off the line. Now, initially, it looked like he did a Darnell Furlong and it was just a fantastic clearance. But replays showed he quite clearly used his hand. And, you know, it's been a common theme of the season, just in some pretty poor refereeing decisions. Not something completely unusual in the championship season. But where does this rank amongst what we've already seen, Justin, in terms of, you know, the really bad decisions?
I want to give Cedric Kipre some credit for mastering the technique of being able to fake handball and make it look like a header. I think that's the key thing, because he's got previous of doing it. Did it for Cardiff in the South Wales Derby last season.
I mean, I will point out that one last season was one of the worst decisions I've ever seen. And I say that because he didn't really master it. He just punched it away.
But he's clearly been working on it. He's had some feedback and he said, okay, Cedric, you need to get this nailed down if you're going to do it again. And he did, because it was fantastic, because it made it look like an Alex Palmer wonder save. It was a poor decision, but I do think seeing that in real time for the officials is going to be difficult, because I had to see three replays and two more on my phone to realise actually Kipre's pulled off the wonder save. I actually think the poorer decision was to give the penalty, QPR the penalty. I can't remember who I bought it, Adam Reach. I thought that was a really poor decision because his arm's basically in front of his face. I know he's lifted his arm ever so slightly upwards, but I thought that was a poor decision in this one, because this one could be easily missed. That being said, you watch it back, it's a bit of a honking one, but at the same time, we can make the argument about VAR, but we won't go into that. But let's not take it only from Cedric Kipre. It was a fantastic save. It was brilliant.
Yeah, Marty, if you went to said after the game, it's strange having two goalkeepers in the opposing goal. To be fair to the referee, no one on the QPR side of things is appealing that decision.
No.
Because of the condensed nature of Loftus Road, the fans are essentially metres away from the incident. And I didn't see many, if any, behind the goal actually appealing. And I think the only QPR player who appealed was Michael Frey, and he was right next to it. So perhaps the referee can be forgiven to an extent. But you thought that one of the referee or the linesman would have seen it. I mean, the linesman in particular, because he's, you know, level with it. So, I mean, even when you watch it back, it is clear as day and undoubtedly a poor decision, no matter how well Cedric Kipre has managed to disguise it. But look, QPR were very unlucky, weren't they? Possibly deserved more than just a point, even though they were behind for so much of the game. They had 19 corners, which I haven't checked, must be one of the highest tallies, if not the highest tally of the season. But they continue to prove to be a really solid side, don't they, Justin?
They do. They were good. And again, West Brom getting back into the game and going ahead, it was in the blink of an eye, and it was two superbly taken goals. And I don't think West Brom created too much outside of that. So you take that into account, and I think it's a really good result for QPR, because they've had to get back into it. They've had to overcome missing a penalty. By the way, Michael Frey breathing like an angry bull, then taking the tamest penalty possible, did also amuse me a little bit. But he ran his socks off. I mean, he deserved a goal for his performance alone. But yeah, I think it was a good display from QPR. I think West Brom were on the ropes. If the game lasted an extra 5 minutes, I think QPR would have found the winner. Alas, it didn't. And we were left to unpick what was the most entertaining of draws.
Yeah, it was a really entertaining draw. But look, a decent point for West Brom in the end. The main man for them in this one, who wasn't one of the players saving shots on the line, was Mikey Johnston. Scored a wonderful goal last Friday and managed to top it here with an absolute beauty. And I've been incredibly impressed with him since he's come into the side. Justin, joined on loan from Celtic in January, and looks a real player, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's been fantastic. He's added that spark that West Brom have probably needed for probably the last 18 months, really, since Carlos Corberan's been in charge. They've not really had that. Jeremy Sarmiento came in, didn't he, in the first half of the season, didn't really get going. And Mikey Johnston's come in and he's taken his opportunity, because obviously, being sent out on loan from Celtic and not really doing it in the SPL, you have some question marks. But yeah, Brendan Rodgers and his Gucci belt are left reeling their decision, because he's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm sure that Gucci belt is also regretting the decision too. But I mean, I will be honest, I didn't know much about him before he moved to West Brom because I don't watch Scottish football, so I don't really know how he was doing there. But it looks increasingly mad that Celtic let him leave on loan because they're a similar level to West Brom. I mean, they're playing Adam Eder up front, for God's sake. So I'm not sure why they've let him go out, but West Brom won't be complaining. He's absolutely electric, and that right foot is proving to be quite incredible, isn't it? Proving to be an absolute weapon because he scored some brilliant goals already and he's quickly becoming West Brom's main danger man. So it's incredibly exciting and I enjoy watching him play because he's so direct and is the man who makes things happen for West Brom now, isn't he? So West Brom stay inside the playoffs after this point. One of the teams who have managed to gain ground on the likes of West Brom is Coventry City. They're now just 3 points outside of the top six after a 5-0 thumping of Rotherham. It's the joint biggest win of the Championship season so far. Coventry had lost back-to-back games heading into this, so Rotherham at home is exactly the game you want, isn't it, after a dip in form. Ellis Sims scored a hat-trick. He had struggled since his big money move in the summer, scoring just 2 goals in his first 24 games. So a tough start for him, but he's now scored 10 in his last 16 games. So it seems like he's starting to become the player we all hoped he would be this season, Justin.
Yeah, he's been the leading man over the last few weeks, and there's been a couple of bumper games in between then. But he has largely been good since the turn of the year, and it has been a slow start. You've got a new team there. There's a big price tag eventually if he fulfills all of the requirements of the deal. And there's a lot of pressure replacing Victor Gyökeres. These things are going to take time. It took Haji Wright time to get going. Heck, it even took Victor Gyökeres half a season on loan prior to his breakout season at Coventry to get going. You're not going to, just because you spent money on a player doesn't guarantee immediate success, especially one who hasn't got a lot of career games behind him under his belt like Ellis Sims. But he's paying for it now. Well, he's not paying for it now, but Coventry are paying for it now because it's a good investment. He's got 2 hat-tricks in 3 games, albeit one against Maidstone. But look, your form's form for a striker. It doesn't matter who you're playing against. And I think that's an important thing. But whilst the record's good on paper, he still needs to keep doing more, and I back him to do it because he's a player that I rate very highly. That 6-month spell at Sunderland last season was fantastic. So if Coventry keep playing to his strengths, he's going to keep scoring goals.
Yeah, well, as you quite rightly point out, Justin, filling the boots of a striker who's one of the most sought after in Europe right now is always quite tricky, isn't it? But, I mean, when they brought Sims in, I thought it was an excellent bit of business. I thought he may be a contender for the Golden Boot this season because, as you say, he was very good for Sunderland in a brief loan spell last season before getting recalled by Everton. And he clearly has a lot about his game, but your main job as a striker is obviously to score goals. And he certainly struggled with that this season because he's missed a lot of big chances and his confidence seemed to be really low. And now he started to finally find his shooting boots and it's great to see. I mean, as things stand for Coventry, they need him to be informed because Coventry's top six hopes have faltered recently. A large part of that is down to injuries to the likes of Ben Sheaf and Sakamoto. So he can re-energise them. And, you know, he seems very much like a confidence player, doesn't he? So the fact he's, you know, got the hat-trick now, what was it, two hat-tricks in 3 games, even though one of them was against Maidstone, as you say, he could be absolutely banging them in for fun if his recent form is anything to go by. So a really, really good win for Coventry. And this season for Rotherham seems to be going from bad to an absolute nightmare, doesn't it? You know it's bad when even Victor Johansson dropped an absolute clanger for the first goal. Yeah. It's one of the worst mistakes you'll see all season. 8 losses in a row now. No team has ever lost more than 10 in a row in Championship history. You wouldn't rule that out right now, would you? I mean, Justin, Rotherham were probably going down whoever they appointed after sacking Matt Taylor, but I'm not sure many of the options they had would have done much worse than how Liam Richardson's doing now, because, let's be frank, it's going terribly, isn't it?
I think anybody who'd have taken that job would be having the same problems, because I just think the squad is poor. It's really, really poor. And I've seen many suggest online, many neutrals or fans of other clubs say they can't be deemed as one of the worst teams in the division because some of the games have been close, the scorelines have been close. If you look at the numbers, they just don't create anything. When they do, it's from set pieces. They're dreadful. They are one of the worst teams that I've laid my eyes on in this division. It's frustrating because there's been a lot of, you know, hard work laid down by Paul Warren in previous years for them to go on and kick on it, and it really hasn't happened. So whether it was Liam Richardson, Matt Taylor, bloody Neil Warnock, I think the outcome will be this game the same. The squad is full of old, injury-prone players. The outcome is always going to be a really, really bad year.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right to an extent, Justin. Looking at Liam Richardson and his tenure as a whole, he's won 6 points from an available 51. which is pretty abysmal, isn't it?
I can't laugh for that. That's so bad.
That is really quite bad. And kind of following on from what you were saying, Justin, Matt Taylor wasn't doing incredibly there this season. If he stayed, they would have still gone down. But they were never this bad under him, because there's very little talent in this team anyway. But now there's no fight and no tactical awareness of how to get anything from a game. And there's such a thing as going down and still doing a good job. That's certainly not what Liam Richardson has done. He's made them worse, hasn't he? Undoubtedly, really. And while it's a pretty unattractive job, whichever way you look at it, because you know if you accept it, you're going to receive next to no backing and be simply fighting relegation and championship each season until you finally go down. So, you know, Rotherham's hands were pretty much tied behind the back in terms of who they actually could appoint. But, I mean, Liam Richardson, this appointment has been nothing short of absolutely appalling, has it?
Can you imagine how bad it would have been as well if Victor Johansson wasn't as good as he is?
Oh, well, absolutely.
The amount of points he saved for Rotherham, the 19.
Yeah. Well, that goes on to the point that you were mentioning just a second ago, Justin. You talk about how people have been saying perhaps Rotherham haven't been one of the worst teams ever because they haven't been thumped too many times. Well, a large part of that is down to the fact they've got a really good goalkeeper. The rest of the team is just shite, isn't it?
Yeah, it is just shite. I'm really sorry to be blunt, and it's crap for Rotherham fans to hear, but this team is bad. And as I say, like I mentioned, that hard groundwork, good groundwork laid by Paul Warren. You know, they were a fit side, they were somewhat organised, and they were good at getting results. And there's nothing there's nothing there. Like I see teams making runs in behind and in between defenders so often, and just, they're leaving behind Rotherham players. It's just pathetic. And that's the easiest, that's the most succinct way of describing Rotherham, is just pathetic. As a squad and as an output in terms of results and performances, it is pathetic. It's so, so bad. And they are, without doubt, a terrible, terrible football team.
It only occurred to me this week, by the way, how miserable a season it's been for South Yorkshire. Because you've got Rotherham having one of the worst seasons in Championship history. Sheffield United, as we all know, are appalling in the Premier League. Sheffield Wednesday are looking good now, but have been in the bottom three all season. And then you've even got Doncaster Rovers, haven't been out of the bottom eight all season in League Two. So the whole region as a whole is just having an absolute shocker.
How many wins have there been?
God, now you're asking.
that's an interesting one to work out. I mean, just to rub salt in the wounds of everybody suffering at the moment, that'd be a good one to put out at some point, because
it's not been great at all. Let's move away from the relegation battle, Justin, and talk... it's not even the relegation battle, is it? That's just relegation. But let's move away from relegation to the promotion race, because Ipswich Town came from behind twice to beat Bristol City 3-2. What a second half this was. Another great round of entertainment if you were one of those who avoided the Champions League and stuck with the Championship in midweek. Just utter carnage here. If it was a boxing match, it would have been one guy on the ropes pretty much throughout the whole thing, and then he just comes out, bang, bang, knockout. And, you know, it is something we've become quite used to with Ipswich Town this season now, isn't it? They've scored 21 goals in the final 15 minutes of games this season, the most in the division, 28 points won from losing position, the most in the league by quite a distance. And, Justin, of course, you continue to be sceptical about Ipswich's promotion chances. Hang on. And... that's fine. Still a long way to go before we can say for sure whether they're going up or not. But as a pessimist here, do you watch games like this and think it almost feels like destiny wants them to go up? Because luck's certainly been on their side at times this season, hasn't it?
It is look, but it's also Endeavour, isn't it? I think that's the big thing. It's Endeavour, it's that grit, it's the character, and that's that never say die attitude that football clubs need in a championship. Because you look at Rotherham, for example, that is we'll just roll over and let you do whatever you want to us sort of attitude, isn't it? Whereas Ipswich is like, okay, let's roll our sleeves up. We've gone 2-1 down. Let's roll our sleeves up. We've had a penalty save in the last minute. We'll roll our sleeves up and we'll go again. They have this ridiculous resilience to bounce back, and that's what I do admire. I think their defending is crap. I think they're a really poor defensive team, but I cannot sit here and be a pessimist no more and say that their attack is not picking them up. I don't think it's their attack even. I think it's just that ability just to keep going. And you don't have that often in a championship. Normally it's control, you know. It's a bit like Maresca's Leicester. It's control, it's possession, it's a bit bland. It's a bit of a ham sandwich. Whereas you get Ipswich, there's cheese, there's pickles, there's...
Ooh. I thought it'd be a bit more exciting than that, to be honest.
I was
a pickle and cheese sandwich. Wow! Now I'm interested.
My ability to jazz up this sandwich has been completely nullified by what I think might go with each other. It's a ham and cheese panini with a bit of tomato.
Still,
I don't know.
Not the most exciting of paninis here.
Help me out. You know what I mean. The listeners get it. It's a great sandwich. And that's what it is. Every single bite you're taking, you're thinking, this is amazing. This, I can't get enough of this. Because that's what Ipswich are. They just keep going and keep going. And that's what, you know, you don't want it to stop. You want this sandwich to keep going.
I'll just tally that up as the 200th episode in a row where Justin Peters done some sort of food metaphor. Just can't help himself. But you know what? They may be a bit leaky at the back, Justin. But even when I was watching this game on Tuesday night and Ipswich were behind so late in the game, I thought, I still fancy them to win this. Because this is just what Ipswich do, isn't it? They are just incredible at coming back. And as we all know, so hard to beat. 4 defeats all season, which is, you know, the next best is Leeds with 6. So even though they are leaky at the back, they're still the hardest team to beat in the league, which is quite an interesting mix, but they're the facts here, aren't they? Leif Davis was central to Ipswich's win. He got 2 assists as well as the winner, which was his first goal of the season, by the way. He's now equaled the championship record for most assists by a defender, and he's still got 10 games to go. And look, he gets talked about a lot on here, Justin, but he is having some season, isn't he?
Yeah, it's that Toy Story meme, isn't it? When Andy drops Woody and says, "I'm done with you now." That's Ryan Giles. Now it's all about Leif Davis. I do think he's fantastic, and he's a great asset to the team. It's very obvious. He's a great asset to a forward-thinking team at Ipswich. And the amount of assists he has is genuinely jaw-dropping, because to be able to do that in any position, that many assists, it's ridiculous. The consistency in his delivery, that's a key aspect, but also the quality of players he has at his disposal. The players want to make those runs into those areas. They want to attack his crosses. You can only dream of that when you're a wing back with the technique that he's got. So kudos to him. He's been fantastic. We've probably given him enough praise this season, but you are right to single him out because he was a big turning point in this game. Obviously, he wasn't awarded the first one with Al-Hamadi, was he? That was his assist and he got the winner, didn't he? It was fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I mean, Ipswich's success this season is very much a team effort, isn't it? But I mean, he probably has been Ipswich's standout player, which is a remarkable thing to say about a left back in a top two side. And I mean that with no disrespect to all fullbacks out there listening, but it's very rare for them to be so influential, isn't it? However, he makes himself influential by just being utter class. The cliche even, wand of a left foot, has never been more apt for a player, because crosses, through balls, set pieces. I mean, the only thing missing really from his game was goals. And now he's got that in his repertoire as well. But look, one goal, but you know, still counts. And I think while you may be right, Justin, we have given him enough praise this season, is he a contender for player of the season? Because, again, rare for a fullback to be in contention for that sort of honour, but he can't do much more than he's done this season, really, can he?
That's a great shout. I mean, it's a great shout mainly because I want to stick a middle finger up to the elite who always pick strikers as player of the season. No, pick a wing back. Pick a wing back, you cowards. Give it Leif Davis. Come on.
You know what? I agree. Defenders always sorely overlooked, particularly fullbacks, and I would not be against it or surprised if Leif Davis was nominated for some sort of Player of the Award. But they don't matter anyway, do they, Justin? It's second tier awards. They're the only awards that matter in this league. Leicester ended their losing run by winning 1-0 away at Sunderland. Three losses on the bounce heading into this, and Ipswich could have gone top if Leicester lost and Ipswich won 15-0. So a close call there for Leicester City. Even though Leicester won, not a great performance, Justin. It was a one which made me think, that's it, they're back on track now anyway.
Your beauty's in the eye of the beholder, Ryan. 1-0 away from home, Tuesday night up at Sunderland. That's beautiful. Football wasn't liquid. But you're coming off the back of three straight defeats. You've got to be a little bit more streetwise. And sometimes a streetwise... The streetwise you is not more fun than, you know, the fun outgoing you. It's a little bit more boring. And Leicester had to be a bit more streetwise because, let's be honest, they've been poor in it of late. And yeah, for them to go up to Sunderland, get the clean sheet and come away with 3 points, that's just as important as winning sexy, you fickle man.
Well, I think... I'm not sure if I am being fickle or not, but Enzo Maresca made the point after the game that this was actually a poorer performance than any of their previous losses. Whether that is true or not is up for debate. But, you know, it's not great when even he's admitting that. In a way, I think Sunderland were the ideal opponents for Leicester right now because they're a side whose season seems to be fizzling out quite quickly. And they're also missing their best player in Jack Clark. I mean, Sunderland were in control for large parts of the game, but were missing that X factor that someone like Clark brings to the team. And if he was there, might have been a different game. But look, Leicester have got to play better than they have done. Their big players have certainly not been playing as well recently. Kieran Dewsbury-Hall's the main one, but Steffi Mavadidi's got one goal in 10 games now. There are certainly a few others as well. But ultimately, Leicester badly needed this win. They've got it. That's all that matters. And they will hopefully be looking at this and thinking that's a turning point. They've got Hull away at the weekend, which is certainly a tricky one, certainly one which I'm sure we'll touch on in the preview show tomorrow. Elsewhere in the promotion race, Leeds won again. They beat Stoke 1-0. Stoke actually gave them a bit of a game here, but it's now 10 wins in 11 for Daniel Farker's boys. Not showing much signs of slowing down, are they, Justin? And Southampton were meant to be playing Preston on Wednesday night, but that one was postponed because of a massive fire next to St Mary's Stadium. No one was reported to be hurt, but the images did look very dramatic. A new date is going to be scheduled in due course for that one. Just before we have a quick break, Justin, I thought be a good time now because we've got 10 games left this season and this is the state of play. Leicester are top with 81 points, Ipswich second with 78, Leeds third with 76, Southampton quite a way back in fourth with 70 but do have a game in hand. And may I take this opportunity to say, as we approach the business end of the season, how nice it is to have an automatic promotion race, because in recent seasons we haven't had many in the Championship, have we? And the ones we have had ended up being pretty easy to call in the end. So it's genuinely exciting being at this stage where we've got, I'd say, 3.5 teams competing for automatic promotion. And I have no idea who's going up automatically at this stage, Justin.
Yeah, you are right. It's brilliant. It is brilliant because obviously Burnley ran away with it last season. Fulham ran away with it, although they did the very best to trip themselves up the season before. So we haven't had, you know, a good title race as such for a couple of years. And again, for that second place, you know, it always heats up at various points of the season. But Sheffield United, they ran away with it last season as well. So yeah, for Ipswich, Leeds and Leicester to all be in contention to be able to finish top at this point is brilliant. Southampton, as you're right, probably half a chance at the moment of being able to do it. But we've seen them go on in a ridiculous run this season and they can easily do it again. But yeah, it is great because obviously the parachute payments can have a big say in it sometimes. And they have because these teams are up there other than Ipswich. You know, they are the best teams and the most well-financed teams. So yeah, it's added a nice dynamic to the season and for us to be able to summarise things a little bit differently.
Well, we haven't had many proper promotion races which have gone down to the wire, have we, in the time we've been doing this? Because in recent years, they've just kind of ended up going exactly as you think. I mean, we've definitely not had a title race particularly at all, have we? Because as you say, Burnley ran away with it last season, Fulham ran away with it the season before that. I mean, automatic promotion races have been few and far between too, because last season, Middlesbrough looked like they may be challenging Sheffield United, but in the end, it just ended up being the top two, which it pretty much was throughout the entire second half of the season. Then the season before that, it was Fulham and Bournemouth, wasn't it? And they ended up winning quite comfortably automatic promotion in the end too. So we're at this stage now where the top three slash top four could be in any order at all. And it's really difficult to call right now. So, I mean, the thing is as well, these teams seem to be keep winning all the time. And when one team does blink, it ends up being absolutely massive. So it is pretty much a case of who's going to blink the most over the final 10 games. And it leaves us with a very, very exciting final 10 games. And you love to see it in the second tier, don't you? Justin, let's have a quick break. After that, we'll talk about some more of the games from midweek. And also, footballers our listeners have met in strange places.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the second tier podcast. Just before we go on to the rest of the midweek games, Justin, we have some more footballers our listeners have met in strange places. A couple of really, really good ones here, actually. This first one is from Adam, the Leeds fan, who is living in Perth, Australia. He says, "Hey guys, absolutely love the pod. I met the one and only Patrick Kisnorbo at Perth Airport. He was still playing for Melbourne City at this point. I remember being lined up to buy a bottle of water and I looked up in front of me was Paddy himself. I'm a massive Leeds fan and felt myself melting stood next to him. Oh. I've never met anyone famous before and could just muster up the statement, 'You're Patrick Kisnorbo.' To which he replied, 'Depends on who's asking,' whilst chuckling. I said I was a massive Leeds fan and he said, 'You guys are absolutely fucking everywhere,' to which we laughed. He bought Maltesers and an iced coffee from the kiosk. Love your work, gents." There's something so endearing about someone being stunned to meet Patrick Kisnorbo, isn't there? Only a proper championship virgin would be able to do so. So I applaud you, Adam.
Honestly, yeah, Patrick Kisnorbo is a great one. Yeah, the line of "you guys are fucking everywhere" to Leeds fans is so true. There's a Leeds fan in every corner of the world, no matter where you go. Deepest, darkest caves are there. But no, that's a good one. Airport meets a little bit skeptical, but you come across a championship legend in Patrick Kisnorbo.
Is he a championship legend?
An EFL legend.
Is he?
In my eyes.
I really enjoy it that only a championship fan, or maybe a Leeds fan, I suppose, but a wider championship fan could be stunned at meeting Patrick Kisnorbo. And that's the thing I've really taken away from this. It makes me wonder, who is the most random footballer our listeners have had a picture with, or, you know, maybe got a signature from or something like that? Because it must be something that we could appreciate, really, if you see what I mean.
I was going to say, I was in Ibiza one year and I met John Brayford.
Ah, yes.
Yes, I met John Brayford and I spent the rest of the night absolutely buzzing with excitement because I've met I met a championship footballer. It doesn't make any sense, but I was so happy.
I've got a picture on my phone of me having a selfie with former Norwich defender Mitchell Dykes, who I'm not sure even Norwich fans will particularly remember, because I think he was there for a season, perhaps only half a season. Hmm. I don't know why I've still got that picture on my phone, but it's just one of them where, you know, at some point we've all thought, oh my God, that's someone over there. And you tell everyone else in your friends group and they'll have no idea who it is, but you feel like you've got to go do something about it. So maybe get in touch, listener. Let us know who the most random footballer you've met is, who you got excited about and had a photo with, but no one else will appreciate it. Elliot's also been in touch with a Streets Won't Forget player. This is carrying on from our chat from last week, where we were putting out the call for listeners to send in their club's most Streets Won't Forget players, just for a bit of nostalgia on our behalf, nothing else. He says for Norwich, it's Marco Stieperman. He says, left back turned central midfielder, turned attacking midfielder in 2018-19. He had it all. A long-range master. That's a good one. Really enjoyed that. Nathan Ashton says for Bristol City, J. Emmanuel Thomas, who...
Yes. Jit.
He was such a... He was a prodigy, wasn't he? A proper definition of a prodigy where everyone was talking about him, but produced moments of brilliance. That was it, though, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. He just signed for a non-league club. I can't remember who it was. It might not even be a non-league club, but it might be way down the ladder. But he popped up to on my social this week, weirdly. But yeah, really good feat. Really, really good feat.
For a
really
big man.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it. Technically really good, but... For some reason, it just didn't quite happen for him. I think Bristol City paid decent money for him as well. But yeah, that's a good one.
Very good selection there. And the final one, this is from Shea Yazdi. He says for Swansea, it's Ferry Body of Swansea City.
Oh, Bodders.
Oh, Justin, that's one which makes you and I properly hold our hearts in sheer joy. I mean, Shea goes on to say what a player he was and what a career he would have had if not for the injuries. And he's absolutely spot on, because if it wasn't for injuries, honestly, people will be listening not having a clue who Ferry Body was. If he wasn't injured all the time, Premier League player, wouldn't he?
Easily. I remember it's quite annoying, actually, very selfish of me, but he had a medical at Derby, or just before he was about to sign for Derby in like 2008. That's when he did his ACL. And then after that, it was just injury after injury. It was really, really quite frustrating because, again, he's just a quality player in a great Swansea system who Derby would have ruined either way, by the way. So I guess it paid off for him in some aspect. But, what a player, what a career. It's such a great passer with the ball. If there's a highlights reel, watch it.
Scored some bloody good goals as well.
Some screamers. Really long distance ones as well. 35 yards. Incredible goals.
Yeah, really good player. Really, really good player. But if you do have a Streets Won't Forget player that you want to suggest for us, by all means, send it in to secondtierpod@gmail.com and we will certainly take the time to have a bit of a nostalgia shot. Because that's what we do here. Anyway, let's go on to some of the other games in midweek. Justin, from the Championship, and Sheffield Wednesday have now won 5 games from 6 after beating Plymouth 1-0. Someone pointed out on X, formerly known as Bebo, that only Sheffield Wednesday could win 5 games from 6 and go from 23rd to 23rd. Funny. When we talk about Sheffield Wednesday, Justin, we always instantly go to Danny Rawle and talk about how amazing a job he's been doing. And, you know, that place is 100% deserved. But we should probably actually mention some of their players, because they've done excellently to pick themselves up after such a shocking start to the season, haven't they?
Yeah, you are right. You know, it's very easy praising Danny Rawle because of the transformation they've had under him. And he's the man. But some of the players that they've got have been absolutely fantastic. So, I mean, James Beadle's come in goal. He's been quite consistent. I know Cameron Dawson's got the ability to make some good saves, but drops a clanger as well, whereas things look a little bit more trusting, shall we say, at the back. Ike Ugbo has been superb since he arrived at Hillsborough. I know he didn't score in the game against Plymouth, but he's got 6 goals in 9 games since arriving in January, which is a fantastic return for a player who was, you know, allowed to leave by Cardiff, or allowed to, you know, wasn't really fancied by Errol Bullitt. So that's a big thing. I mean, Ian Poveda, he looks hungry. He's trying to prove himself as well, and he's looking really, really good. Marvin Johnson is another one that springs to mind. He's got 7 goal contributions in 21, despite being given the middle finger by Isco earlier on in the season. He wasn't even registered in the squad. So you've got to take your hat off for Rule for putting those moving parts and getting them blended together and playing in a way that is getting them results. Because 5 wins out of 6 is a really difficult thing to do in a championship, especially when you don't have the resources of other teams. So credit to Danny Rule for doing that, but credit to the players for hitting form. Because another one that needs to be mentioned is Will Vokes. He's been fantastic as well. He's become a real leader in that team. A lot of praise to the players. They've been superb, and they just keep plugging away and defying the odds.
I mean, you've pretty much named every player that I was going to mention there as well, Justin. Because
no regrets.
Ugbo is the main one, isn't he? When he went to Sheffield Wednesday, I pretty much shrugged my shoulders because he was pretty bang average at Cardiff. But 6 goals in 6 games now is a ridiculous return for him. And, you know, Will Volks obviously deserves a mention. I mean, Barry Bannon as well. As always, they provide a lot of experience in the middle of the park. And that's really showed recently. Ian Pervader's been getting rave reviews from Wednesday fans because they've been so impressed with him. And I think you're absolutely right to highlight Marvin Johnson. He's perhaps had the greatest turnaround of all time, going from not getting a look in under one of the worst managerial reigns that we've seen at championship level to becoming a key player for Wednesday recently. Perhaps the headline here, though, is Wednesday's defence, because they've kept 4 clean sheets in this 6-game run, which is pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, earlier in the season under Isco, the problem was they never looked like scoring. Defensively, they weren't an absolute shambles, but they've still managed to improve in that regard. And that's really impressive. If you keep it tight at the back, you're going to get points in some shape or form, aren't you? So that's exactly what they've done. So Danny Rule's done amazingly well to get these players to roll their sleeves up and fight for their lives. And that's exactly what they've done. So, you know, once again, hats off to Danny Rule. Fantastic job. So Wednesday might still be 23rd despite this winning run, but they're now only in the relegation zone on goal difference, which is a pretty insane turnaround, isn't it? Worth mentioning as well, Hansi Flick was at this game, the former Bayern and Germany manager. He, of course, used to work with Danny Rule, so wanted to show his support for his former colleague, which, interesting, Justin. It is nice, isn't it? You've got Hansi Flick, Timo Werner's keeping an eye on Wednesday as well. It turns out Sheffield Wednesday are one of the most popular English clubs in Germany now, apparently.
Yeah, that's incredible. They'll be serving currywurst in the concourse. It would be a great addition to the usual sausage roll and what have you. But no, yeah, lovely. Lovely to see. It's nice to see that sort of support, especially from a manager who was elite at one point. I don't know whether he is now or not, but yeah, fantastic.
He probably still is. I don't know what his next job would be.
It's been a bit shit for him lately, isn't it?
Won the Champions League.
Yeah, a while ago. So is Roberto Di Matteo.
Fair point. by the way, final points on Sheffield Wednesday. Danny Rule says they won't be signing former German international Nico Schulz on a free transfer. But it certainly caught our eye at the time, didn't it, Justin? Because I think he's got 12 caps for the German national team. Mm-hmm. Borussia Dortmund spent 20-odd million on him not too long ago. But the club have faced a fan backlash after he was training with them, with Schulz set to appear in court, charged with grievous bodily harm against a former partner. So there we go on that one. Middlesbrough got just their second win in 8 games by beating Norwich 3-1. Norwich went ahead in this one with a Puskas Award contender from Ashley Barnes, Justin.
It's the most Ashley Barnes goal I think I've ever seen in my life. That was just, if you could personify Ashley Barnes scoring goals, it's this one. Just falls over it. Falls over it and eventually gets in. I don't even know how he got it in. And it was just chaos.
I think a more Ashley Barnes goal, to give him a bit more credit, is last season in the East Lancashire derby when he scored that header against Blackburn and pushed Thomas Kaminski over in the Blackburn goal almost instantly. But I get what you're saying. This was absolutely glorious. He completely miskicks the ball with his left foot and at the same time inadvertently controls it perfectly. But because he miskicked it, he falls over and seems to spend an age crawling around in the penalty box. However, still has the wherewithal about him to swing a leg around and knock it past the goalkeeper. Just tremendous stuff.
It was what I mean. It just feels like it's Ashley Barnes now. Lack of, not as much aggression as he maybe once had, but certainly as much as the chaos that he brings to a football pitch. And that's what he does. He gives others the license to do what they need to do in Josh Argent, and sometimes falls over a goal himself.
I also enjoyed him not knowing whether to celebrate or not. He was just, because he had fallen over, he was sat on his arse, just fist pumping, because he was like, a bit ashamed to celebrate that. But, you know, goal's a goal. The turning point in this game was Boya Sainz' red card in the 30th minute. It was an incident following a 50-50 between him and Johnny House, and Norwich were still 1-0 up at the time. I mean, Middlesbrough scored two goals shortly afterwards, so undoubtedly the turning point in this game. Was it a red for you, Justin?
I don't know. I feel like kickouts need to be a bit more obvious sometimes. Maybe it wasn't. I think Johnny Howson sells it quite well, but at the end of the day, it's just a little bit of petulance from Sainz. Maybe it was a red. You just don't do it. Don't give the referee decisions. The easiest way to say it, isn't it?
Well, that's it. It's harsh, but he knew what he was doing, because it's obviously completely unnatural for him to be on his back like that with his studs aimed at Johnny Howson. And ultimately, whether it's a red card or not, if you give the referee a decision to make, you're always in danger. I mean, by the way, Sainz has got he's become the second player to be sent off twice this season. He only made his first start for Norwich in December. So it's fair to say he seems like a bit of a hothead. I remember from the East Anglian derby, he seemed to be involved in every single ruckus which was happening in that one. So, yeah, he's...
Streets won't forget footballer in the making.
Maybe a streets won't forget player in the way that he's the one starting all the scraps and people are having to drag him away from confrontations all the time. But he's certainly got that red streak in, haven't he? Watford 1, Preston 1, on the theme of the playoff race. Both these teams have kind of got outside chances of the playoffs, haven't they, Justin? But the highlight from this game was Ryan Andrews' own goal for Watford. That was proper own goals and gaff stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was comical. I mean, Daniel Batman's making his first start for a long time. Ben Hamer's been dropped. And I think the most amusing thing about this is, well, it's not amusing. Well, actually, no, it is, because it's how the own goal played out. But it's the fact that Watford fans have been clamouring for Ryan Andrews to start. And bloody hell, does he start and he scores an own goal within 20 minutes of that happening. It's unlucky for him, but it was proper clangor. Love to see it, but hate to see it happen to a young lad.
I disagree. I just love to see it in general. I particularly enjoy the own goals where the ball's just rolling over the line painstakingly, where there's a small moment where the defender or the goalkeeper thinks they may be able to salvage the situation, but in the end the ball's just crawling over the line and it's just beautiful.
You see the hope leave their eyes as they try.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what
Lovely.
We love.
Lovely stuff.
And the final game we'll discuss from midweek, Justin, is from Birmingham and Hull. An 82nd minute equaliser from Lukas Jukovic saw Birmingham draw 1-1 away at Hull. And Justin, I know you bloody love Juki. He's still powering them in, isn't he?
Who doesn't love Lukas Jukovic? Just put the ball at the back post. He's going to head it. He makes Andy Carroll look like, I don't know, and not an efficient target man. Jukovic is good. Thank you. Jukovic is the man. You want to get back into a game. You want to sling the ball in the box. He's a plan B. He's Mr. Plan B. And he deserves more credit than that, but in his later years, he's Mr. Plan B.
For Justin Peach, who has really exposed himself in the past few months as someone who just loves a get-it-launched kind of footballer. That's why Lukas Jukovic
falls. That's more exciting than anything.
It falls perfectly into your wheelhouse, doesn't he?
Yes. He can do everything. Well, no, he can't. He can just head the ball back in the box. But that's all you need when you last 10 minutes of a game. You need to get back into it. Pump it in. Duke's on it. He's on it.
I made the point on social media this week that he's one of those players who doesn't get appreciated by fans outside of the club he's at. But he's 34 now. I think he's out of contract in the summer, if not this summer, definitely the summer afterwards. And this is probably the last remnants of Lukas Jukovic at Birmingham that we're seeing in some shape or form, isn't it? Which is sad, but he has been such a good servant for Birmingham, hasn't he? And if this is the last season that we have Lukas Jukovic playing for us in the Championship, we'll have to pay tribute at some point, Justin, because he has been a proper, you know, quotation marks legend for Birmingham, hasn't he, over the past 7 years or so, however long he's been there. But he's been a proper, proper servant, hasn't he? Liam Rosinha, just a quick word on Hull. Liam Rosinha was not a very happy man after this game. He said, "This is the most angry I've been because we've thrown points away. I'm really disappointed. We should have been out of sight at half time. If you are not ruthless and don't take your chances, then you'll be punished in the Championship." It's quite strange seeing Liam Rosinha angry because he's usually one of the most laid-back, calmest managers in the division, isn't he?
The thing is, he says he's the most angry he's been, but I still wanted to give him a hug because he still comes across as so nice, even when he's angry. But he's got every right to be angry. Hull, countless times, got into really good positions in this game, didn't take their chances. And I think that anger is probably residing from the fact that they are in a position where they can finish in the playoffs. They've drawn three games straight because they're not being ruthless enough. And maybe Rosinha does need to really just show that anger, that aggression, maybe kick a bottle or something, just to really convince the players that he is angry, and then maybe they might become more ruthless. I think that might be the thing.
I was almost as angry as Liam Rosinha here because you know what last man standing is, don't you?
Yeah, I'm aware.
Yeah, yeah. If anyone isn't aware, it's where you pick a team each week and you can only pick that team once and you keep going until there's one man standing. I had Hull in this one, and there was 600 quid up for grabs, down to the last 10 as well. It was a very bitter pill for me to swallow when I saw that Birmingham equalised, although it did put a wry smile on my face when I saw it was Lukas Jurkovic, because that man can do no wrong in my eyes. But I'm still a bit sore about losing out on that money, because I've been very handy ahead of Cheltenham next week. Anyway, this has been the Second Tier Podcast. Just before we go, actually, Justin, a quick update on our call out for the Championship clubs, the official Championship clubs' Twitter accounts to tweet about Lee Camp this week. We've had no success, which is very upsetting for you and I, the cowards. However, we did have Dan Brown, who's a Sunderland fan. He got in touch this week to say Talk Sport did a quiz involving Andy Goldstein and Darren Bent. And he said one of the quiz answers was Lee Camp. Coincidence?
Is there a producer in the mix?
I think there might be. I mean, we've been on TalkSport a few times, haven't we, over the past couple of seasons? So maybe not that much of a surprise if we've got a producer or maybe even Andy Goldstein himself listening to us. But this can't be a coincidence, can it?
It can't be. How often does Lee Camp come up in quiz questions? In any form, walk of life, in any scenario, never. He's not a quiz question, is he?
He's not Nicholas Anelka, is he?
He's not.
He's not your classic answer to every single quiz, or Kanu. You know, he's not one of them.
No, he's Lee Camp, Championship man. Nothing else.
So I don't think this is a coincidence. So that TalkSport producer who's listening to us right now, thank you. We're taking that as a W, even though all the other Championship club official Twitter accounts have let us down over the past few days. But there's still time if you want to redeem yourself. I'm going to be keeping a keen eye across social media over the coming days. But anyway, this has been the Second Tier Podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with our preview show sponsored by SBK to have a look ahead to the weekend in the Championship. So we bloody look forward to seeing you then. But otherwise, this has been the Second Tier Podcast. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I'll be Justin Peach.
And a big thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.